Welcome back to Your Zest Life. I'm your host, Genevieve, and this week we kick off a three-week series that I'm really elated to join both the Your Zest Life community and the Women's community to be together on. As the founder of Women's Community, we are kicking off our Sober Curious series, and I invite you to join. This is one of our key empowerment programs that is designed to support women as they navigate their relationship with alcohol. In this series, we provide resources, support, and guidance to kickstart your sober curious journey. Now, like with any lifestyle change that involves your health, we are not the experts here, merely providing resources, tips, and support. If you do find that you have a serious problem, we encourage you to speak with a professional counselor. Along the way, we will also be interviewing and featuring Women's and their sobriety or sober curious experience during the next few weeks. This week is a very special interview as I get to interview a guest who just celebrated her 3 years of sobriety and is my sister. Reba is a visual artist and writer living in the high desert of Nevada. She helps a team of creatives publish evidence-based workbooks in addition to treatment, federal corrections, and behavior change. On the side, she loves art and writing, mountain biking and snowboarding, rock climbing, trail running, and enjoying the outdoors with her dog. This conversation holds a very special space for me as I get to learn from my sister as she opens up about parts of her sobriety that I'd never known about. Trying to be as unbiased as I can, she's truly an empowering example of what exactly can happen when you give yourself the chance you're worth. Reba also opens up about her recovery, shares about what has helped her with her sobriety, provides insight for anyone looking to change their habits or behaviors, and shares what changed everything, allowing her to fully commit to being sober. Wow. Sis, I'm so proud of you, and I'm grateful to get to learn and be inspired by you. I think you too will leave inspired after listening to the words of my sister, Reba Rice. If you would like to join the Sober Curious series, you can sign up by visiting womenscommunity.com/sober-curious. That's womeness, womeness, community.com/sober-curious. Enjoy. Welcome back to Your Zest Life. I am your host, Genevieve. I'm so happy you're here today. We are kicking off a series with Women's Community called Sober Curious, a 21-day hybrid series designed to help women navigate their relationship with either sobriety or a sober curious lifestyle. And in the next few weeks, you'll be hearing a series of interviews with women who have either navigated a sober lifestyle or a sober curious lifestyle as well. I'm really excited because today I get the honor of getting to have my sister on the podcast today. Reba, I'm so happy you're here. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm really good. I love your drawing in the background. I know this is your apartment because I've been there. You're a big horse lover. I remember growing up, so Reba is my younger sister, even though people always think you're the older sister. But I remember when you would act like you were a horse. You remember this, yeah?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, where do you think that came from? Was it from Disney Spirit or what? Like, I was trying to think back. When did your love of horses happen?
Boy. I think it was before Spirit. Well, Dad and I took horseback riding lessons together. That was one of the ways that we bonded. So I think it kind of stemmed from that, kind of a way of connecting with Dad.
Do you remember, and you were so cute, I mean, because how old were you? Six, seven?
Yeah, six or seven.
Yeah, just sitting on, and you were in your element. Like, I swear, if you could have had the choice to become one with the horses or continue to live your day-to-day, you would have become one with those horses. Oh my gosh. Well, for those who don't know you, can you maybe share a little bit about you, maybe what you do for your job, as well as with your new business that you've created?
Sure. So I'm 28 years old. I live in Reno, Nevada. For my day job, I'm a writer. I work for a publisher that puts out kind of like a guided workbook. We call them interactive journals. That works with like addiction treatment. We work a lot with the prison system and create some curriculum for currently incarcerated individuals working through behavioral health challenges, substance use, that sort of thing. And then I did also just start up my art company this year, Marrow and Ink, as kind of a way to, I guess, create a sort of community, some involving sobriety, as well as just kind of mental health awareness and the importance of talking about our mental health and prioritizing that.
And it's been really, I mean, I'm your sister, and so I'm kind of biased. I feel like you could do no wrong in my eyes, but it's been really cool to watch you. I think this has been the last couple of years so just such a big time of growth for you, stepping into who you are and just owning your strengths, and it's really powerful. And what's neat is that I've been able to watch from afar because, again, we don't live with each other or next to each other, but getting to see this usage of social media and the impact that you're having on this community you're creating, like, it's really powerful. So I hope that you're proud of what you're doing. Like, it's making a difference.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had to have a proud sister moment in there. I want to
You.
know a little bit more too. Like, so tell people a little bit about your artwork. I think it's really unique. It's really just very, I want to say masterful, but just the imagery, like it's very powerful. But also, I would say, I don't know a lot about art, but I want you to explain a little bit about why you chose the path you did with your artwork.
Sure.
And is it challenging to open up the way that you do?
Well, what's funny is that I didn't really start doing it with, I guess, really the end goal of reaching a lot of people. I started doing it mostly for myself to be able to kind of talk through things. I mean, if you've seen it, I do a lot of visual representations of bones and skulls, which I understand can look kind of dark from the outside, but I think that the thing that I like about them is that it's kind of humanity and all of living creatures' essence, like everything stripped away after, the end of our lives. It's the one thing that lasts. So it's, I don't know, I've always just kind of been fascinated by bones and living someplace like Nevada with, some parts of it kind of feel like the last of the Wild West. You go out on hikes and there are still a lot of bones and we still have, I think, one of the few remaining populations of wild horses here. So that's always something that I've kind of been drawn to about it. And then alongside those visual representations, the part that I thought was kind of for me was the captions. I've always been really into reading and writing. I mean, again, I did it for me and posted it, and then more and more people were starting to say, like, oh wow, like, sure, the drawing was great, but like I read the caption and it stuck with me, and that's why I'm here. So I'd say that's about 50-50 in terms of the little community that I've started to populate there. Half are there just for the art and half are there for the writing and the captions. So I wasn't really expecting it. I wasn't expecting to start anything big with it, but here we are.
Yeah, and it is. It's grown so much. And I think that what's cool about what you said is, that validation, and not that we're looking for validation in what we're doing, but like the validation of who we are is not, while we're unique, the struggles that we go through and the problems that we face, like it's not that different than what others are experiencing. And in that sense, to have something be so relatable, you know, coming out of, you know, the last few years that we've been through, knowing that as much as we ourselves are struggling, someone out there can be this like glimmer of hope, that if they can see the strengths that are coming from their challenges or their battles, like, then I too, you know, we too can find those strengths. So I think that's really cool that you've created a space that's not only inspiring and motivating and just, I mean, really, like, your work is empowering to read your captions and to have them line up with your work, but a space where people feel seen and like they're not alone. That's neat.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, historically, I've always been a pretty private person. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of been an opportunity for growth and vulnerability for me too. Again, I wasn't expecting anything to come out of it, but that's something that I continue to refer back to anytime I do get, you know, kind of the spookies of being like, oh my gosh, like all of this about me is out there. But the fact that it can help people, I think that it's okay to be vulnerable with each other kind of for the greater good.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I totally believe in that. And that's, again, knowing you, having grown up with you, you know, it wasn't like, you weren't like a feely, you were very sensitive, but not like an external, you know, like you loved animals. You were very caring about them. Like if there was a bird outside on the ground, like you were the one to go to it and want to make sure that it got where it needed, or, you know, a pet needed to be. And I was thinking of you the other day, a dog was running across the road and I'm like, I've got a snowing and like, I've got to make sure this dog is. Yeah. Yeah. And and then Luke's in the car and I'm crying and there's an old dog running and then Simba's freaking out, but you know, but it has been cool to see you tap into this vulnerable side. And like you said, to allow us to be vulnerable with each other. And so I want to thank you too for opening up about this, because I know sobriety is something that we've discussed a little bit together, but I don't know if you've been able to share your full story. And mm-hmm. So I'm curious here, if first off, making this connection between your artwork and your writing, was this something that helped you to recognize the start of your sobriety, you know, if we can call it journey, or what do you think, like, what was the beginning of it for you?
The beginning of sobriety for me?
Yeah. Or realizing that the lifestyle you were living needed a change when you're using alcohol.
Man, I mean, I think that the very first time was actually when I was still living in LA. And I was reading, because again, that's something that I've always enjoyed doing, was reading and writing. But I was reading a book that was a sort of memoir, actually about a woman that works with horses. Come full circle. But she talked about kind of the first time that she ever said those words to herself, that I'm an alcoholic, and just kind of coming to terms with that honesty in herself. And it kind of stuck with me, of just confronting the facts. And so I think I kind of just sat with that for a little while, of being like, well, like, I know that some of my habits have, you know, gotten a little bit beyond what they were before. And just kind of sat with that phrase for a little bit and promptly forgot about it and kept living my life the way that I was living it. And then it was when I moved to Reno that I think things started to really escalate. And it was when I tried to do like a 30-day challenge. I think they call it like 30 dry days or something like that. Where I was like, well, I'm just going to try this out and see how it goes. And I think I made it all of 3 days. And I think that was when I was kind of startled by how bad it had gotten without me really even realizing it. That was the start.
Yeah. And I remember being at your house. So I came down to see you Christmas a little over 3 years ago, because you just celebrated how many years of sobriety?
Three years.
And it was, what was interesting to me is I wouldn't have been able to tell. And that's, you know, a lot of times you can't tell
sure.
with someone. There's maybe little things, but having not lived with you in a while, only getting to spend a little bit of time with you. And we spent that Christmas together. And I remember you were drinking right up until New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd said that you were going to, I don't remember if you said like you're going to do a dry January, but you had hinted at giving up alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I knew at the time what that really meant. I thought maybe it was like a 30 days and then you'd be back. Mm-hmm. At that time, did you know like this was, because you've been sober since then. I mean, what was different about that time when you said, I'm going to be dry right now?
I think up until then, the 30 day thing, I think was leaving myself a safety net of, at that point I knew like this lifestyle has to change, but saying that I was only going to do it for 30 days kind of gave me a safety net of like, well, I can always go back if I want to. But that time around, I knew that it had to stick. I knew that things were going to start snowballing if I didn't make that change then. And there was something that this woman had said. I'm part of a sober women group on social media. And I'm trying to remember the wording that she used for it. But she said something like, you have to make it non-negotiable in your mind. Mm. And that for some reason really stuck with me, where mm-hmm. I'd been kind of leaving these little breadcrumbs for myself each other time that I'd attempted, because it probably was half a dozen times that I tried to cut back or moderate. But I mean, I was allowing myself to have a way back into it. So that time around, I had to kind of make it non-negotiable in my mind and kind of make a pact with myself. Like, well, like we can't turn back. Like we have to just keep moving forward.
Yeah. Wow. And so you think that's what made that time different than any other time, is making it a non-negotiable, like this is how it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think got you to that point? I mean, for women who are out there listening right now, and maybe they're trying to decide if a sober lifestyle is what they need, if that's the change that their life needs right now, what were some of the things that were happening to you? Or, you know, maybe we want to take this back a little bit, talk about your relationship with alcohol. When did your relationship with alcohol start, and what was that relationship like?
So I was 15 when I started drinking, which thinking about that now does feel very young. But yeah, I was 15, and I think at the beginning it was almost just kind of a social pressure. It was when I was at work, when we would all get off work, everybody would just sit around and hang out, and I just didn't turn it down. And from there, I mean, I think that a big part of me did kind of like, even just the, not necessarily the routine, but I guess kind of the culture around it. But it did get to the point where, you know, not only would it be something kind of like, oh, you know, I had a really long day at work, like it would be really nice to go home and have a drink. And then conversely being like, oh, well now, you know, it's the weekend, so I should reward myself and celebrate the weekend and have a drink. So it was snowballing pretty early on in the get-go. And similarly, anytime there was any sort of mental or emotional challenge that I was facing, that was what I turned to, because again, earlier in my life, I was a pretty introverted person and I was pretty private. So that was just kind of my way of handling things or not handling them. So that, I mean, really was kind of the root of the problem that it became was, you know, having some fairly traumatic things happen and using that as a way to not deal with it. And then that just kind of turned into years of isolating myself. And yeah, so that was, I think, the biggest root of all of it, was just using it as a way to not actually deal with anything that was going on in my life.
And in place of that now, you know, what are some of the coping mechanisms, or what are some of the resources that you have to deal with? Because it's not like those problems go away, right? The issues that I'm sure that you were using to navigate or to deal with, what do you turn to now?
Well, I think that was kind of one of the most profound parts of getting sober, was it was almost overwhelming. Like, it almost kind of felt like one of the like ice dunks, where when I quit drinking, it was like all of these things that I had been avoiding started to come up, like all of these really intense emotions. But alongside that, I hadn't realized that I'd also been numbing all of the positive emotions too. So that was a really profound experience, even just in the first couple of months. It was overwhelming, like the amount of emotions that I would experience day to day and the intensity of them. So I think that that's something that should be acknowledged and celebrated, that, you know, getting sober isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think that it's, well, of course it's not a bad thing, but I think that it's okay to take the time that you need to kind of grieve some sort of thing that you're losing. But at the same time, being able to look forward and recognize that there are so many good things that are going to come out of it. And a big part of that was that now I had all of this time and energy and money to put into other things that bring me actual, real, lasting joy. So a lot of that has, you know, turned into different hobbies of mine that, you know, not only just bring me joy, but can also kind of be a sort of coping mechanism. So I do a lot of things outside. I really enjoy mountain biking. I love trail running. Pretty new for me is I've just started to kind of delve into rock climbing. So just kind of being able to have that time and energy devoted to something else kind of naturally lent itself into becoming the things that I do now to work through any sort of mental or emotional roadblock.
Yeah. And it is, I've noticed, I mean, you've always been this very free spirit, like light, just kind of, and I don't know if this makes sense, but kind of like floating through life, but you're experiencing life. But there were some years where, you know, looking back now, you could see some differences, you know, again, from outside looking in. And that's hard when you're on the inside. Like, you might not be able to feel that. And so for people listening right now, when they're trying to navigate their relationship with alcohol and tell, like, will my life be better if I give up alcohol? Did you have any of these moments when you were drinking? I mean, were there moments that stood out to you where maybe they were tipping points for you, or big aha moments where you asked yourself, like, is this worth it? Or is there something better that I could be doing right now? I mean, I just wonder, when people are listening, having some of those aha moments for them might be helpful to identify maybe some, not necessarily trigger points, but some or trigger warnings, but just some moments of trying to find clarity for that change.
Sure. I mean, the first moment that kind of pops into my head, and I think also it's a good idea. It's been one of the kind of tools on my tool belt, is to kind of have a little collection of memories that I can think back to. If I do feel tempted to drink, I can think back to these memories and be like, oh no, like, this is why we've made this decision. But one of the biggest ones, wasn't that profound or big necessarily in terms of what was going on, but I remember I was flying somewhere, and I didn't have that long of a layover, but I mean, somebody that's drinking a lot of times will schedule their entire day around when they can have their next drink. So I remember finagling it in my head that I had time to go and get a drink between flights. So I went and I did that, and I almost missed my flight. So I remember when I got to the gate, and everybody else had already boarded, and they said that they'd held the plane for me. And so there's kind of that embarrassment as it was. And I remember stepping on the plane and finding, you know, the one open seat that was left. And I walked past this woman, and she just touched my arm and like had this look on her face, but she looked at me, and it, I mean, I think that one of the things that people when they're drinking will kind of tell themselves is that they're hiding it really well. And I don't know, I mean, that just kind of felt like a moment that was really profound for me, that somebody was kind of seeing through my bullshit. Mm-hmm. But kind of little moments like that started to build up. But that's one that I think back to a lot.
Wow. These moments where we're seen by others are so valuable. And I know, again, this just because of the relationship that we have in this conversation and wanting to, I mean, you're my little sister, right? I always want to protect you from anything, right? I want for you to be happy. I want for you to be successful. And I know there were times where, and I remember specifically when you were living in LA and when you'd moved to Reno, and that was a difficult transition for you for a number of reasons.
Sure.
And knowing, you know, you can feel something. Like, you and I are very close, even though we don't get to have that, like, let's see each other every week experience. But knowing that something was going on and wanting to help, I think that if someone's listening right now, who maybe they might feel like someone in their life is maybe in trouble or they're worried about them, what is something that they can do as an outsider to support someone who they might be worried has a negative or complicated relationship with alcohol? And what do you wish that, you know, what do you wish as far as support that you had, or do you wish that there had been someone sooner who had stepped in, and or would it have even made a difference? Do you think that the timing had to work out the way it did? That's a big question, I know.
I mean, I think that for people that do have a problem with drinking, it can kind of push them in the wrong direction if somebody is overly enthusiastic to help. I mean, I think that the best thing that someone could do is just be there for that person and be willing to listen and, you know, not try to either tell them what to do or tell them outright that they think that they have a problem, because that tends to just kind of push those types of people into their shell even further. I mean, I know for me, I would always get really defensive, and just kind of tangle up that ball of yarn of like self-perception even more. So I think that honestly, the best thing that you can do is just kind of be there for that person and just listen. I mean, thinking back when I quit, I mean, like I said, I'm part of that group online of the sober women. So that was helpful, but I mean, I think that it has to be up to that person to get themselves out of that hole, and to seek out the support when they need it. And for me, a lot of that looked like books. I think that in that first month of sobriety, I think I read like 5 memoirs written by women who were sober. But I don't think I had too many people physically around me in my life that had that same sort of impact. I mean, as a young, like I said, I'm 28 years old, as a young woman, there aren't that many people that are around me that are this young who are openly sober. I think that that's kind of a misperception that society has, is that, you know, an alcoholic has to look a certain way. It's, you know, that old man at a bar by himself. So I think that that almost kind of isolated me, or I let myself isolate myself in that sense, that, I mean, you don't necessarily hear the stories of the younger people that are getting sober. There's just not quite that community built up, which, I mean, is why I was so on board with doing this with you and Womenist, that it's kind of creating that community that is so needed. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that while I didn't have that physical support around me, that this can kind of be an opportunity for that, for women that are looking to change their relationship or evaluate their relationship with alcohol.
Well, I think that's really, again, it goes back to you saying, like, we should be able to be vulnerable with each other and create a space where we can lean on one another. And I think then I would ask you, for someone, because I'm sure there's, you know, even I've navigated my relationship, I would say I practice a sober, curious lifestyle. I will go in phases where I don't drink for a while. And it's checking in with myself and seeing where I'm at mentally and seeing what alcohol is doing for me. And the more often I practice these sober, curious segments or phases, I guess you could say, I come out of them and I realize alcohol doesn't really do as much for me as I thought it was doing. And so I think my question for you then is, someone who's listening, what would you do to encourage them then to take that next step, or to maybe this is something where they've tried the 30 days dry and they've had a similar experience where they make it 3 days in and then they're right back on. Mm-hmm. What piece of advice or what piece of what resource could you give them that would help them to make that non-negotiable step?
I mean, I think that it's important and it's helpful to kind of be all in. I mean, at least for the first month or two. I mean, when I did it, I really went all in. I mean, I was reading books about sobriety. I was watching movies about sobriety. I fell in love more with the acting of Sandra Bullock because she was in one of those movies. But I think just really leaning into that culture of sobriety and learning as much as you can about it. And I refer to it as nesting, but I did a lot of nesting in that first month. Your body goes through a lot in terms of these changes that you're putting it through. So it's, I mean, you kind of confuse it, you take away something that it's learned to depend on. So I remember that first month, I could not get enough sugar. So I was craving sugar. And so rather than try to fight those cravings and be like, well, I need to be eating healthy, I kind of just let myself lean into that and was like, I could worry about, you know, making any of these other dietary changes in the future. Right now, the most important thing is that I just don't drink. So I did a lot of nesting where I would have a lot of fruits and chocolates, just hang out at home and, you know, watch these movies, read these books, learn as much as I could, and not beat myself up for not being very productive. That was something that I kind of planned for. and everything else can come after. I think that it's important to just kind of let yourself get through that first month and whatever that looks like for you. It's okay to kind of baby yourself. I looked at it a lot as like treating myself like a toddler and kind of getting it back down to the most basic needs that I was having. Like, okay, I'm really grouchy today and I don't really know why. Like, what do I need? I don't know how to deal with any of these emotions anymore. But yeah, I think just kind of giving yourself the space that you need, and just kind of, again, stripping it away to the most basic needs and treating yourself like a toddler for the first month, was really, really helpful for me.
No, I think that's just really helpful for anybody, really, right? I mean, again, going back, this has not been an easy time, and people are finding that they're turning to alcohol and other substances to help them cope with something that no one's wrote a playbook. No one knows what we're supposed to do or how we're supposed to navigate this. And I think that's important to take a step back and ask ourselves, okay, I'm feeling grouchy. I'm feeling lost. I'm feeling hurt. Where is this stemming from? Mm-hmm. What do I need? And something that you said in, you know, because we'll have a feature on you as well, and you filled out some questions for us, and you said that truly each of your worst days sober have been better than your best days drunk.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at that, yeah, tell me. Yeah.
I mean, I think that that's so true, because it's, I mean, again, like even on my worst days, like at least I know how I'm feeling is real. It's not this kind of thing that I've fabricated and put together. So yeah, I mean, I see it as kind of a privilege that I get to experience these days now, even if, you know, I had a really tough day, whether it was work or, you know, kind of navigating the pandemic, whatever it is, like I have the privilege to be able to feel all of those emotions in their true form now versus just kind of fabricating this, I guess, kind of fantasy that, you know, you're going to wake up from the next day and probably have a lot of guilt and anxiety. And, you know, none of it was actually real, if that makes sense.
Let me ask you this. Was it harder having those, I want to go to someone like your challenging days while drinking, or was it more difficult making the change?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
Yeah.
So my dog's snoring in the background. No, I was
distracted. Coda bear. Was it more difficult during the days where you were drinking, you know, at some of your lowest points, some of those more challenging moments, or was it more challenging to make the change?
I mean, I think that they were challenging in two different ways. I guess that the difference was that the challenge when I was drinking, it wasn't a fruitful challenge. I mean, it was kind of the same sort of challenge that I was having day after day after day after day versus the challenge of deciding to quit drinking. There was a reason and a purpose behind it. It was something to work toward. And it was, I mean, so much more of a fruitful challenge that there were little and big rewards along the way. So it was much more worth it. Whereas there wasn't really any sort of end goal or reward with the challenges that came with drinking.
So more, much more purposeful driven challenge. Wow. Well, gosh, I just, you know, I'm very proud of you. I know getting to experience the last several years and watching just these different phases of you and really watching you flourish. You know, it's been very inspiring, and it makes me happy to see you happy. And I can tell that you're happy, you know. So to end this, you know, what's one thing that you would have said to yourself during those challenging moments of change where you struggled to keep going and you struggled to find that purpose-driven focus, what would you have told yourself?
I'm thinking. I mean, I think that a lot of times during those moments, it did feel really hopeless and disoriented. And I mean, back then I think that I had let it spiral to the point where I let myself feel pretty hopeless and didn't really think that I was necessarily deserving or capable of giving myself that chance. I mean, there were a lot of times when I kind of settled into like, okay, this is the life that I've chosen for myself. And, you know, I've made my bed, I have to lie in it. So if I could tell myself something, it would be, you know, that you're worth the chance that you can give yourself. You're worth that strength and the effort that you can afford to put into yourself. And that, I mean, I think it's important to acknowledge, like, yes, it's going to be hard. Yes, it's going to be really emotional. Yes, you're going to be reevaluating relationships around you and lifestyle choices along the way. But what you're going to end up with is going to be so much better than what you're leaving behind. So it's okay to experience that difficulty and experience all of those emotions along the way, because it's going to be worth it. Yeah, and just everything's going to be so much better.
Wow. Well, I mean, I feel like I just keep telling you this, but it's because it's true. Like, you're growing up into this amazing woman, and I'm so proud of you. And I know that someone listening to this right now is very inspired by your words. And if they are like, I can't get enough of this Reba Rice, where can they find you? Where, remind them again where your artwork is and where you fill your soul out into the universe.
So my art page, it's on Instagram. It's Marrow and Ink. And again, I talk a lot about mental health and sobriety. Yeah, that's where I'm usually at.
Okay. You've got some beautiful originals, I know, for sale also on your Etsy.
Yes.
Is that right? Correct. Yeah. Well, Sister Pooh, thank you so much. I love you. I'm proud of you. Thank you for being on here and sharing your story.
Thanks, sister.
All right. E-E.
E-E.
Bye.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. I hope this episode brought some zest into your life. And if you think this podcast will bring value to someone else, please feel free to share. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. You can also find more insight on my Instagram at Genevieve_Nuttinghower. And click the link in this episode's description where you can find my website. All right, I can't wait to rally with you next week.